Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online, so you can access it from anywhere in the world. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whenever it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist with no additional cost. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/howtosurvivesociety. That's betterhelp.com/howtosurvivesociety. Hello, survivors. This is your girl, Abby Ayola Williams, and you're now listening to How to Survive Society. How to Survive Society is a weekly podcast that features survivors. These are people that have been through the ringers in life. They've been through hell and back, but they choose to stay positive. They choose to win. They choose to thrive, and they choose to survive. So let's get right into it. Hello, survivors. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of How to Survive Society. Today, I have a very, very special guest. His name is Sean Robinson. And Sean is going to talk to us about how he discovered himself after going through alcoholism and the tips he used in his journals. He has a book out, he's an author now. So we're going to talk more about that. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hi, Abby. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Can't complain, you know. I just wish it was summer right now, but...
Yes, don't we all?
But other than that, I'm great. So talk to us a bit about growing up in Ontario, Canada, and how that was for you.
Okay, so growing up, my parents were married when they were 20, 21 years old, and they had me when they were, you know, a year or so later, and, you know, had a young lifestyle. They had a lot of, you know, friends, social circles and things, and I think things that that we can very much relate to nowadays. But you know, I grew up oldest of three boys. So I have two younger brothers. My parents, you know, we were always well looked after, but, you know, their young lifestyle, we grew up watching them do certain things, watching, you know, people come over, drinks were around, abundance was definitely there. And we were, you know, I was just used to seeing alcohol and drinking around. So, you know, through my childhood, I knew how to mix a, you know, proper rye and Coke or rye and ginger ale when I was like 8, 9 years old. It's all fun because, you know, it was never drinking them, but fun to help out or whatever, be involved. So once I got to a certain point growing up, I felt like I had a good handle on how I was supposed to do this game and how I was supposed to have my drinking sorted out. So I kind of carried what I learned growing up into, you know, how I was supposed to do it, and was hosting. I had full stocked drink fridge and, you know, made sure to maintain, you know, a certain element that I felt was true about how that, you know, hosting and parties and functions goes. So it kind of led to just me having that habit, having that routine of, you know, the hosting and outside the hosting part of it, just having these drinks or having people over, you know, when I'm barbecuing or anything, summertime especially, just always having that drink in my hand and one after another was just normal.
Mm. So did your parents ever talk to you about alcohol and drinking, or like how to at least be a social drinker? You know how sometimes people only drink when they're out somewhere or when they are they're around people. So were you more of a social drinker, or you were just drinking regardless of anything?
No, I was. It was more social for sure. There was times where I didn't feel like I needed it or whatever. There, you know, I didn't feel like I needed it every day. I wasn't hiding it in the sense of the word. Even though when we'd go to a function and I was packing the cooler or whatever to go, or we were out at a venue, I would buy more or drink more than I should. You know, almost hide it in a way that I would drink more than I knew I needed. But the social part, it was fairly responsible in the sense that, you know, it was almost assumed that I knew what the right answer was. And I think we don't realize how much our children pick up from us, or how much they see, and we don't explain it to them because we don't realize that they're paying that close attention. So mm-hmm. The social part and the drinking part that I witnessed, especially, you know, knowing how to mix drinks when I was, and my brothers were the same, you know, as they grew older and I got busy, that they had fill-ins. You know, we forget how much our kids are watching and we don't understand in the moment what the right answer is. Mm-hmm. We think we see what the right answer is. We think we're witnessing, you know, the best behavior, but, you know, yeah. I don't feel like I was harmed by it in any way. I don't think that they did anything other than just, you know, live their life. But I do believe my parents didn't, as I've done with my kids, and I think we all do, we don't realize what, you know, we're sharing mm-hmm. with the young ones.
Mm, I see what you mean. Like, kids pick up on your actions, not so much your words, right? So did you ever spoke to your parents about the impact of them having alcohol in the house and having parties and all those things out that impacted you on your journey of with alcohol? Did you ever have a talk with them?
I think by the time I realized that, you know, what I was witnessing and that environment, I think by the time I realized I was already living on my own and it wasn't a conversation that I needed to have with them. It was more me realizing how that affected my lifestyle and my habits and routines and then what I can change. You know, there's a lot of things that we don't realize is the wrong information until, you know, we're older and you say, you know what, like that was the example I had, but that wasn't the right example that wasn't what I want to do now. So it's like taking that environment that you thought was correct and figuring out how to be better than that, or how to fix what maybe you couldn't fix when you didn't know any better.
Mm, that makes sense, because we're only aware of our own surroundings. So we don't even know if our surrounding is the right surrounding or bad until you actually step out of it and you realize, oh, yeah, maybe I need to change.
Yeah, exactly. And when I started to you know, what led me to the book, that was a lifestyle I kind of carried. You know, there were certain things and happening. It was just always assumed that I was going to have drinks, or that, you know, I was going to a function. I wasn't going to not have a drink at a function because everybody else was doing it. It was just the way I was used to being in that moment. My routine was to be involved. So, you know, to get to a point where I was feeling very unhealthy, I was 320 pounds, and just kind of miserable with my mental state and where I was at. I just needed something to change. And that was the quickest thing I could do. That was something that I would, you know, lean towards being more healthy. But I didn't realize until I started not drinking or not having that, you know, mechanism in my hand at a function, holding a beer or holding a whatever. I didn't realize how much of a habit and routine it was to me to be that way. And how hard it was to change it, you know, and like any habit, like I started keeping track of of everything I was working on. You know, I was brushing my teeth, and to do that twice a day when you're not used to doing that twice a day or anything is difficult, right? So I was writing on the calendar in the morning. I'd check it off, and at night check it off, and I'd get through, you know, 30, 60, 100 days of documenting this thing on the calendar, be it that or something else. And all of a sudden, like, I don't need to document it anymore, because I just can't wake up and not do it, or go to bed before, like, without brushing my teeth, or I just wasn't drinking. So as you know, any habit or routine we're trying to work on, writing it down, documenting it, keeping track, I started to learn more about habits and how my habits were kind of set and established. And I felt that this is just who I am. I'm not going to not drink at a party because that's not me. People don't expect that from me. I feel like I have to maintain this person that I believed was supposed to be who I was. And, you know, to change all of that, especially without someone telling you you have to, is, you know, there's, yeah, we just don't know how to do that.
It's true. Like, for you started your self-discovery after you were up to like 326 pounds and you weren't mentally well. So that's what made you go on your own discovery path and personal development. You're right. Some people don't know when to start, because they don't even know that they have a problem, or until a doctor tells them, okay, you have to lose weight, or, oh, you have to go to AA meeting, you know, then that's when they start doing stuff. But kudos to you for, you know, for recognizing that you wanted a change, and then you did that on your own by putting your words on paper and just helping yourself. So that's amazing. So what tips do you have for somebody out there that's an alcohol, that drinks alcohol a lot, and they're trying to maybe stop it, or at least lower the amount of alcohol that they drink? Like, what are the tips that you have for that person?
I think at first it's important to know that you can always be a different version of yourself. You can always work on yourself. You can always change. That was something that I didn't believe. I didn't think that I could not be, you know, different than what I was used to being. So to know that, knowing that you can always change, you can accept different things. I accepted that I was going to drink something else at a function, or like, just not have alcohol. So I think my biggest tip is, to after accepting that you can be okay in that environment, is first thing I did was kind of find something else that seemed close. Now, I didn't want to go to the 0% and the mocktails and those things, because I wanted to change the complete, you know, what I was doing. I felt if I had dry January without, you know, anything, I would just go back to it, no problem. I got a special mug. It was just a Yeti mug that I used, and I could pour whatever I want in there, and just keep drinking out of that mug during whatever function, or if it was at a venue, just you get a glass at a venue and just have something else out of that. I found that most people aren't worried about what you're drinking. They weren't worried what I was drinking. I was more worried about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have, because that mechanism is important. It's like quitting smoking, right? People get so used to having that mechanism of, you know, bringing the cigarette up to your mouth and whatever. Yeah. Drinking's the same. So if you play with that mechanism, have something else in the cup. To you, it's not alcohol. To everybody else, it doesn't matter, because it looks like you're playing the game. You know, mm-hmm. if you stand, I found I didn't want to be the one standing in the corner with a bottle of water, just feeling like everybody was watching me. Because it was so obvious, right? At least if it was water in a solo cup or water in anything else, it was like, it didn't matter, because I was still there. I was still enjoying myself. It wasn't, you know, you're not holding an umbrella inside, kind of obvious that you're drinking, you know, water or whatever. So to answer your question, I think just have a mechanism, and to just understand that nobody else but you is worried about what you're drinking. And you can still have a good time without drinking alcohol. You can,
yeah,
even if it's temporary, you know, just drink something else.
That's true. I was laughing when you said the water thing, because I'm that person that would go to a function and have water in my hand or in my cup. But then I started saying, okay, let me try and fit in a little bit. So now I've upgraded to sparkling water. it looks kind of like gin, you know? So it's like, okay.
Yeah, that's good. It's not the water part. It's just, you know, you get that. And I've seen this at a function, so I'm using it based on my experience. But like you see that person at a party or at a function, they've got that bottle of water and they're just twisting the cap on and off and they're kind of fidgeting with it. Maybe it's even gone by now, but it's something for them to play with. And if that person, you know, used to be a drinker or not, it's just, you know, there's an awkwardness when you've got that person that's not playing the game. Now, you know, not participating in what's going on, and it's like they're just standing there twisting the cap on and off the bottle. But you know, if you took that water and poured it in a cup, you could fiddle with that coffee cup, whatever. It seemed different to me. And I felt, because I had that environment, it was like, you know, I don't want to be the person that people are thinking about that's judging them for whatever's going on. So, you know, I it just helped me, actually, like, whether it was, like I said, better for everybody else or not, it just helped me feel like I was more involved than holding the clear plastic bottle.
I see what you mean. So let's talk about your book, Journey to Self-Discovery. So when did you write the book, number one, and what's in the book that people can look forward to when they want to read it?
So it was never in my intention to put it out there. I've never been, you know, one for being out there and being exposed. So to me, this was a journal. I'd started journaling because my confusion, I didn't know how to fix my weight issue. I didn't know, you know, how to be a different person, all the things I've learned since. It wasn't who I thought I was. So I was writing things down in a journal. I was very much, you know, beating myself up, questioning what it is, like, how can I figure this out? And then when I decided to stop drinking and I started, you know, listening to podcasts and reading books and just allowing myself to branch out and be more open and learn, I was still journaling and I was writing these things down that were useful, things that were good. I was, you know, kind of coming out of a shell a bit. And then, you know, as in the background, my friend was getting married. I was in his wedding, and, you know, there was a lot of wedding functions, and every function that we went to, be it, you know, showers or suit fittings or whatever, it was just, he kept telling me, you better drink at my wedding. I don't care. You better drink at my wedding. And I didn't know how long I was not going to drink for. So I had a lot of pressure and anxiety around just that statement, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't tell him that I wasn't. So I'm journaling through this process and just kind of writing things down. I had a few rules for myself that I, you know, want to have fun. I want to participate. I want to, you know, stay on course and then get through these things without drinking as a point to just do it. And so journaling throughout, I got to about October of that year. So I decided to be off of it for a year at that time. And I got to October and my friend says, you know, how are things going? I said, oh, I could write a book. And I got thinking about it. Like, I've got 10 months of journaling. I'm two more months into the year that is, you know, not drinking at that time. And it became clear to me that there is a lot of literature that's out there but there's a lot of stuff that's from the expert opinion or not opinion, but a lot of expert stuff, a lot of, you know, people writing about stuff after the fact. And I was looking for some resources that would help me during, and I didn't see a lot of during. It was a lot of content that was reflective. So I thought that I could use my journal to kind of take up from a point of confusion and you know, 320 pounds, not sure how to fix it, to kind of getting to a point where I can be a different person. I can use what worked for me and share that in a way that someone else that was in a similar situation as I was, that's, you know, not sure, isn't, you know, having to go directly to, you know, the doctor's literature or journaling, and they can kind of use something that maybe would be more, you know, relatable, something that I was looking for that I couldn't find.
Okay, that makes sense. So why do you think society is set up for us to fail, pretty much, like, especially when it comes to like social events and things like that? And like you said, your friend saying, you better drink at my wedding, you better drink, like, there's always someone like that in your life that wants to pressure you into doing stuff that you don't want to do. Like, for example, I don't drink, I don't smoke, you know, I don't eat meat, I'm vegan and all that. But then everyone around me is always like making fun of like, oh, this one, she doesn't drink. Oh, this one, she doesn't do this. She doesn't, you know, like, it's always someone commenting on something. Like, why do you think society is like that?
I think just because there's, I don't know, I don't want to say strength in numbers, but there's just so many people that are doing it a certain way, you know, drinking, eating meat, whatever it is. So many people are participating in these things. And so it's just different when someone isn't. So the example of my friend not, you know, telling me any better drink, it's, he didn't know how to handle that I was different now, or that I was trying to be different now, because we were so used to, and we used to drink together all the time, right? He was at my wedding and we had drinks at my wedding. It was, you know, people around us, especially, they don't know how to handle us differently. They have to learn, you know, how to accept and you know, how we're going to be. Society, I think, you know, there's so much money in it, and I don't want to get into that part of it, but, it's almost expected because of the environments and the commercials and, you know, all the advertising that just shows us on the beach with a beer or a drink, or, you know, in a circle with the friends, and you're having this great, great time. So it's like, we know how to handle ourselves, or we know how to act in different situations, because, which includes those things, just because it's so acceptable. You know, if I was to say, I'm taking a break from peanut butter for any reason, although you might get it to people like, really? It's not, it's different if you're taking a drink from, or taking a break from anything else, or you're taking a break from alcohol. It's like, or cigarettes. It's like, oh, you're not doing that anymore. How come? But if you're taking a break from whatever, it just doesn't hold the same weight. So I think it's just because of how ingrained it is and how acceptable it is. You know, you can't go to a football game or hockey game or whatever without it being like almost shoved in your face to be drinking, or, you know, to participate in what most people are doing.
That makes sense. It does. So how can someone say no to social pressure? You know, like, it's hard sometimes, you know. For me, yes, I have a great no, you know, like, if someone's offering something that I don't want, I'm like, nope. But, you know, there's peer pressure, especially with teenagers and young adults. Mm-hmm. And so how can someone like that say no if they're around things that they don't want to be around?
It was difficult in a bit, especially because, like, it was something I did before. You know, if it was something I'd never done, you know, it's a different conversation, because then there's different tactics there. It's like, well, I've never done it, but I've heard it's no good. So, like, and I know how I've handled that with different, like, drugs and stuff. Like, you just don't, because it's not. But when you're used to doing something a certain way, and then you've got to now do it differently, like, there's a lot of reprogramming there. And that was where I was coming from with this book too, being my path to overcoming habitual drinking, is, you know, all of the things I was used to, it's like, I'm not going to do that anymore. So to try and learn and use habits and tracking and just trying to figure out how to be different in that environment is like, you know, I was used to doing this a certain way. I'm just not going to do that anymore. For people around me to learn how to deal with me, for me how to learn to deal with it. Saying no was difficult, but I had to be accountable for myself. There was a function or a few, but one in particular with some guys from work. And like, I come up, I work construction, and I've been on a fire department volunteer for almost 20 years. So those environments, there's a lot of pressure in those environments to keep, you know, not fire drinking in fire hall, but like, you know, afterwards going out, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of, you know, typical situations there, construction especially. But like, I didn't want to do it. So for me to say no in this one situation in particular, where, you know, a buddy said, oh, you're out, you're here, you're going to drink with us. I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, how come? Like, your wife's not here. Like, oh, my wife isn't making this decision for me. Wow. She's not the one that's saying like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
How I would get in a situation definitely would have affected our relationship, but I decided to do this and it was up to me to maintain it. If I decided to not do it, then it would have been on me and not, and nobody else for the decision to stop. So, once I was compounding the days and, you know, I was 30 days, 60 days, 100 days, a year, whatever, because I'm still not drinking. But once I got compounding those days on and I could see the results and losing weight, like I'm down 100 pounds now. I'm down under 220. And, you know, I'm seeing all these effects and the positive, like it's easy for me to say no now. Because I feel I've got the tools to do it. Yes. But in the beginning, and where I'm coming from in this book is, you know, this is when I didn't have those tools. This was when I was getting started. It was the hardest part, most confusing. I was in this mindset with construction and firefighting and just toxic masculinity that I just couldn't reach out for help. I couldn't listen to the podcast. I couldn't read the books because it just wasn't what, you know, men did. It wasn't what like that, you know, stereotype did. So, you know, for me to be that, you know, in that position, a lot of me, the stuff that I did on my own, we don't have to do this stuff on our own. I didn't have to do this on my own, but I didn't figure that out until I got over all those things. Right. And someone out there like Ed Milet, he said, you're most qualified to help your former self. Well, what I'm trying to do is just get the message out that I was looking for, that, you know, we don't have to keep going a certain way. This is how, you know, way I got started. And I feel like it takes a bit of the, you know, maybe the hardship of getting started when you can relate to somebody else that's already gone through it.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense. So how can people get your book, Journey to Self-Discovery?
So Going Dry, My Path to Overcoming Habitual Drinking, it's available on Amazon. It's available. Some bookstores are carrying it. It's in Canada. It's at Indigo Chapters. I know it's Barnes and Noble's got it. Right now I've got, my website is, seanrobinson.ca. It has a direct link to Amazon and I'm posting more videos and content to, you know, just try and be more positive, try and get more positive message and just share about, you know, healthy habits and anything I can do that translates to somebody wanting to get started.
Perfect. And before we go, is there anything, any last comment, anything you'd like to tell the listeners out there?
I think I just that I appreciate Abby, you having me on your show, and I want everybody to just do one thing that every day that makes themselves better.
Perfect. Thank you, Sean. That's Thank a you. Good one. Do everything. Do something a day that will make you better. That's a really, really good one. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Big, big thank you to our guest for today. And if you would like to learn more about today's topic, please go on howtosurvivesociety.com. There you can get some life skills courses and some merchandise. And contact me if you would like to be a guest on the show. So thank you so much for tuning in and have yourself a lovely day. Today is a great day to start your own podcast. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message you want to share with the world, or just think it would be fun to have your own talk show, Podcasting is an easy, inexpensive, and fun way to expand your reach online. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and more within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Let's create something great together. So if you ever need help to start your own podcast, reach out to me. And then, you know what you can do also? You know, you can follow the link in the show notes, that lets Buzzsprout know that I sent you, so you can get a $20 Amazon gift card when you sign up for a paid plan. And you can also support the show that way. So yeah, so if you're looking to start your own podcast, reach out to me, follow the link under the notes show, and you'll be able to sign up and get a $20 Amazon card. Yeah.